Moving to the our next presenter this morning, which is Scott Collings. Scott's one of the founders and a principal of Finity Consulting. Following a very brief stint as an electrical engineer, Scott's been working in the general insurance industry for about the past 25 years. At Finity, he manages their volatility and capital management practice and is appointed actuary for two general insurance companies. He's a member of the Institute of Actuaries General Insurance Practice Committee, and in recent times he's been responsible for a number of institute submissions in relation to LAGIC, and as well as co-authoring professional guidance on associated matters. Scott.
Thanks, Adrian. Right, I'm going to talk about something along the similar lines, but from a different perspective. We're going to talk about industry experiences with ICAP, and we thought, given it's fresh in people's minds, we might look at what kind of things did insurers learn through that process, quite a few new aspects to ICAP, and perhaps I think as Kate noted, there's probably plenty of scope to improve the documentation around that process, but I think in terms of the actual delivery of it internally, I think insurers learn quite a lot. So what have I done? I've actually spoken to about 30 different insurers just to try and take a bit of a straw poll to see what sort of issues they were identifying. What did we learn? That includes four of the larger insurers and quite a few of the small to medium insurers, so a good range of experience. And you can imagine the experiences varied greatly across the industry. The five topics which kind of emerged from those discussions were board engagement was a big issue, scenario testing, which I'll get onto, the whole documentation of ICAP and the process of actually implementing ICAP was quite a topic in itself. Quantitative modelling, a lot of people had a lot to say about the quantitative modelling side of things, and just the whole process of designing a capital management strategy. So these were the five key areas that I've got some feedback to discuss with you on. So board engagement. It seemed to be that the boards were generally very engaged in this process, and I think they were pretty clearly aware that this was their document and they were active to get involved. And it was over quite an extended period of time. There was a big educational component to it. A lot of actuaries and risk managers referred to the need to educate board on quite a number of the different topics, and that was I guess, to be expected. And there were a lot of workshops done, risk appetite in particular, stress scenarios, those sorts of things. A lot of boards were getting workshops run for them to understand and to work through those issues so they could actually design a good ICAP document, which obviously was a good opportunity for a lot of these actuaries and risk managers to actually get in front of the board, to understand the board's issues, to actually learn from them firsthand what those issues are and to actually help them to design the document. And we did get there were a number of comments that the board was just too engaged. Some actuaries and risk managers felt like they were on a never-ending process of trying to come up with new scenarios and new documents, and it was all a bit wearing for them in the end. But I think that was probably part of the idea. Scenario testing, they loved it. Scenario testing was something that board spent a lot of time on. There were a lot of comments like it was very useful for articulating risk appetite, a very useful addition to the capital management process. A lot of companies appear to not have spent a lot of time on scenario testing in the past, and this was quite a new thing. And the boards really, quite a few boards lapped it up, running into workshops and that kind of thing. So that was very good. That was, I think APRA has probably achieved a pretty important goal with that part of the process. It was described as business continuity planning for capital, and I think that's a good way of actually phrasing it. A lot of boards looked at it that way. Reverse stress testing was new to a lot of companies. I think it was only positive feedback really about that part of the process. And I think it was a focal point where insurers and boards started to appreciate better the actual volatility in their business and what it actually was. Perhaps a little concerning for some to actually understand really how volatile general insurance is, but no doubt a good part of the process and certainly a useful educational aspect for the boards. Documentation, that was something that really did need some serious ownership, and those who took it seriously from the outset and pursued a path and a good project management process did a good job on it. For those who kind of took a little bit too literally the idea that it was just pulling together documents that you already had, they usually struggled towards the end, and there was a big rush to actually pull the whole thing together. And that's probably shown up in some of the documentation that Kate was talking about. It really was a little bit optimistic to think of it that way. The challenges, the main challenges identified particularly included disentangling and trying to re-express what already exists as ERM frameworks within companies and try and pull it together in a way that made sense for the ICAP. If you didn't have a framework to start with, then maybe it was a bit easier. But for those who were already down a certain path, perhaps it was a bit more tricky to, you know, pull it apart and reassemble it. The whole concept of LAGIC and all the changes there, while they're portrayed as not having a major impact at an overall capital level, they certainly have impact on strategy. So investment strategy and capital management strategy, the composition of your capital, just the whole way that the new PCR formula works, certainly was an undercurrent of change throughout the whole process. So having to deal with that at the same time as actually set out all your new capital management processes was a challenge for quite a few boards. The lack of guidance on documentation was an issue. A lot of companies would have preferred just to know exactly what they had to do. So no doubt there's a wide variety of documents out there now because of that. Avoiding duplication was something which a lot of people mentioned. So, you know, we don't want to put in front of the board lots of documents that they've already seen before. So how do we actually design this ICAP summary statement? Scheduling workshops, because boards keep asking for workshops, and getting boards together, as everyone knows, is not an easy task. So documentation side of things was quite a challenge, and I think the experiences varied quite greatly. With quantitative modelling, that was a new and a challenging area, particularly for the smaller insurers. Certainly the ICAP gave the impression you needed to be thinking about probabilities and risk in a bit more of a quantitative framework. Now, for the larger insurers who had already been down this path for a number of years, that was a lot more straightforward. They had internal capital models, or certainly they at least had advice using internal capital models that they could rely on. But for a lot of smaller insurers, that was a challenge. And some don't even have proper three-year business planning models. So, you know, ICAP really fast-tracked a lot of useful internal processes. The closer integration between the risk appetite and capital management strategy really became quite a focal point for understanding that whole quantitative modelling side of this process. So how do you tie a small probability of ruin to the likelihood of needing to raise capital and use that whole quantitative framework to design your capital management strategy was a challenge, even for some of the big insurers who'd already been down that track. And obviously, because it's quite quant-based, a lot of boards needed quite a bit of education on this aspect of things. I'm not really sure how far that went. There's certainly quite a few comments around having to contrast scenario testing with probabilities of impairment or insolvency and what's the relationship between those two things. And that's not an easy question to answer. Certainly the uncertainties in the modelling process was quite a strong theme. So highlighting not only, as Ian's already mentioned, the uncertainties around catastrophe risk modelling, but also just the general uncertainties around investment return modelling and various sort of aspects of any internal capital model, which, as anyone who's ever built one would understand, there's a lot of parameters and a lot of uncertainties around those parameters. And I don't think the communication of the modelling uncertainty around those processes is perhaps quite as advanced as it could be. So it was a challenge to get a robust framework, and I think a lot of people acknowledge that. With the design of a capital management strategy, the risk tolerance obviously comes into play quite strongly. So, but typically it had to change. Most insurers had to change their risk appetite to actually deal with and actually produce something that they could actually drive a capital management strategy from. So risk tolerance was often the subject of risk appetite workshops. And what a lot of insurers discovered was earnings-based volatility measures weren't that useful to them. They couldn't really convert them into something usable from a capital point of view. They needed to rely more on capital-based risk measures. And for a lot of insurance companies, a lot of normal listed companies or just normal companies that are used to reporting to shareholders on the basis of earnings and meeting earnings targets, that was a little bit problematic, but I think most of them got through it. They certainly had to turn their risk appetite statements into more probabilistic statements of process rather than, sort of high-level statements around earnings targets. Choosing thresholds. I mean, a lot of companies found themselves moving from using a single threshold, we don't want to go below 1.2 times the upper minimum, to thinking about multiple thresholds, multiple targets. And that was all quite challenging for them because every target comes with a different probability of hitting it, and how strong do you want the capital management policy to be. So as a process, I think that tied up with the risk appetite, that it all started to integrate ICAAP for a lot of companies, actually thinking through those thresholds and what their actions would be with those thresholds. I've mentioned before internal capital model probabilities and trying to benchmark them against scenarios. A lot of comments about actuaries being asked, well, what's the probability of that event happening? And it's almost impossible to answer that. You've got a single stress scenario. Maybe it's one of the 10,000 simulations in my internal capital model, but that doesn't mean it's a one in a 10,000 year event. So there's quite a few challenging communication issues for the actuaries there. Spelling out their capital decision process in advance did seem to be quite a challenge for a lot of companies. A lot of companies weren't used to actually spelling out in advance, if this happens, then I will do this. They're used to just a relatively bland statement about, well, we'll go back to the shareholder if we do this, but needing to actually be a bit more specific was quite a challenge. And certainly identifying alternative capital sources, even for the insurers who have wealthy parents, having to think through the traumatic experience of what if they no longer had a wealthy parent, what do we do then? That was, often part of the workshops and part of the thinking process, which no doubt was quite a useful part of the process, but also part of the challenge. So just to summarise, key learnings, I'd say the boards love scenario testing. They'll probably keep wanting scenario testing, so that's going to be a useful addition. ICAAP's clearly been a boon for the workshop industry. I think boards everywhere have been demanding these, and they probably will keep wanting them. The earnings-based risk measures didn't work particularly well. A lot of insurers found that out, and shareholders certainly want them, so there needs to be some sort of compromise there in risk appetite statements. The documentation was a challenge. I think the documentation inevitably will improve over time, so we'll see that happening as we go forward. And one thing I didn't mention was this whole process for branches is a much harder thing. You just imagine yourself as a branch with a parent where you're trying to actually get their attention and to document an ICAAP process where they're not particularly interested in how much capital they hold in Australia. They know they need to hold a certain amount, but for them, they've got money all over the world. It's much more challenging for branches, I can tell you. And from an ERM framework point of view, I think uniformly everyone would agree that the ICAAP has brought some welcome consistency to their process. I don't think there's any complaints about that. Perhaps some feel it's a little bit heavy-handed, but there weren't any real complaints about the fact that it's actually integrated those processes in a neater way. Dealing with small probabilities, I mentioned that. That's been a bit of an eye-opener for quite a few insurers, and I think boards are now a lot more aware of the uncertainties around working with internal capital models and reinsurance, so that can only be a good thing. Certainly from a management point of view, having boards understand better the sort of volatility that you're trying to manage day-to-day, I think can only be a useful thing. And I mentioned before, pre-committing to capital management decisions in advance was quite a challenge for boards. So I think that's my time. Are we going to move to questions next? Okay, all right. Thank you very much.